Hi, I'm Tim Hernandez. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today we have a special guest and good friend of mine, Patrick Fontes, who is going to be speaking about his brand new collection of poetry titled Mountains of Rust. Patrick's just an interesting cat, you know, a research scholar, PhD from Stanford, poet, and also a former punk rocker. Just a great guy all around. He's got this brand new collection out. So looking forward to speaking with him, and that's coming up right now on Words on a Wire. Patrick Fontes grew up in Fresno, California, the grit, grime, and strength of the working class city there. He received his PhD in American history from Stanford University. His research interests include Mexican American history, American immigration, history, 20th century American youth culture, and the criminalization of Chicano culture. His poetry has appeared in multiple journals, and he's an avid photographer. He currently teaches history and Chicano and Latin American studies at Fresno State and Fresno City College, and he is now a new professor at Clovis Community College. Patrick Fontes, welcome to Words on a Wire, my brother.
Thank you for having me, Tim. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure and my honor. What a wonderful book, a collection of poetry that you have titled Mountains of Rust. And, you know, it's actually just about to come out. It hasn't even officially been released yet, so we're like the first to help you launch that, and we're really proud of that. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, congratulations, man. And, you know, also, I mean, before we even get into this, I want to, you know, unfortunately, our listeners can't, you know, they can't see. We don't have that technology yet. They can't see right through the sound waves, you know. But if they could, they would see a wonderful cover, which the cover is comprised of three of your own photos. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. I'm also a photographer. And those three photos, the top one was a makeshift roadside altar near Santa Cruz. The middle one is from a junkyard in Fresno. Turner's Junkyard, which is one of the largest in America.
Wow. Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And the bottom one is from a graveyard in Guadalajara, Mexico, called the Vampire's Grave.
Wow. So vampires, rust, and crucifixes all on the cover. That tells you the dynamics. And then Fresno's in the middle of them. That's interesting.
That's right.
And, you know, I didn't know that this was like the largest junkyard in the country or something like that, you know, because, you know, I pride myself in thinking I know all things Fresno, but, you know, it's obvious I don't. So that's great. Wow. I didn't know that. What's the name of that junkyard?
It's Turner's Auto Wrecking. And in fact, it's almost like a museum. They have cars there from the 1920s, machine gun bullet holes in it from a cop chase and stuff like that. It's a pretty amazing place.
You know, I look forward to talking with you, getting into how you know these things, because it's all a part of who you are, and you're a multifaceted artist, and not just a writer, but as you mentioned, too, a photographer, and also a, I don't know, I kind of consider you like a poet, punk rock research scholar, you know, so, I mean, all of those things, you know, and so we'll get into each of those individually as we go on, but to kick our listeners off with a poem, I think that'd be the most appropriate way to enter this conversation. So why don't you give us one?
Well, this one's called Mi Primo Stain. I grew up near Belmont. A lot of my cousins, well, a few of them got, you know, involved in the F-14 scene in
what's
the
that,
70s. And
tell
I got cousins doing life.
What's the F-14 scene? Tell us what that is.
Well, the F-14 was a gang in Fresno that morphed into the Bulldogs in the late 80s and 90s. But F-14... we're affiliated with Nuestra Familia, which was based out of Salinas, the northern half of California, Mexican and Chicano gang.
Yeah.
And the F-14 in Fresno, the F stand for Fresno and 14 stand for, I believe, the N in Nuestra Familia.
Yeah.
And so they were involved in those gangs, and I have cousins doing life right now. So this is about, you know, my cousin doing life and me missing him and the memories we had as kids.
Cool.
They called me Primo Stain. Mi primo's canvas painted body, monochrome India ink on brown skin. Blurred, scribbled on his forearm, faded into prison cell walls at Juvie, 1983. Then Corcoran, Wasco, Tracy, Quentin. Damn, primo, this is my second strike. He scoops more of my mom's, his tia's, Sunday menudo from a boiling pot. Hey, why do old Mexican ladies put a plastic cover on the tablecloths? We chuckle in sadness as he sprinkles onions, oregano, chili flakes, and then squeezes a slice of lemon. Damn, this is good, primo. He stares out the window at my kids playing. Hey, ese, you remember when we played hide-and-seek in Grandma's yard? At night, we heard giant rats in the trees. Always thought there were ghosts chasing us. I remember ghosts back then and now. He dips a rolled up tortilla, soaking up broth. His right leg a jackhammer, pounds up and down. I turn myself in tomorrow, cuz. He cracks open a pig's foot, breaking bones, tearing ligaments, biting knuckles. He searches in between spaces for hidden happiness. Hot menudo juice screams from his immaculate white shirt with creased sleeves. Over the sink, frantically, he forever scrubs, straining muscles, fighting the crimson stain.
Fighting the crimson stain. So you're listening to the voice of poet, punk rocks research scholar Patrick Fontes, reading from his brand new collection of poetry titled Mountains of Rust, and that is out with Bone and Ink Press. So Patrick, you know, one of the things that I noticed about all of the poems in this collection is that they're really kind of elegiac poems about family, friends. It's a very personal collection. You know, community also kind of goes from the internal sort of, you know, your own sort of observations to family and friends, and then even expands out into the community. And the community we're speaking of here, or that inhabits the book itself, or that the book inhabits, is the central San Joaquin Valley town that I'm from, also Fresno. And now I should also, you know, clarify that I haven't known you my whole life, you know, I think. But, you know, you and I did recently meet each other probably in the last few years by way of, you know, writing and the Fresno community. And, you know, so that's how I came to know who you are in your work. But to hear it here in your writing is obviously much more personal. There's a sense, I think, I think that there's a sense of a kind of awakening, maybe, even within these poems, you know, a sort of personal awakening just underneath the poems. I think if maybe you can go into this, I mean, would you consider this accurate, or is this a little bit off the mark? I mean, you know, would you talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, that's very accurate. But yeah, this collection is, it's deeply personal.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about my own experiences growing up. You know, there are many sides to Fresno.
Right.
There's the agricultural side. And many poets have written about the bucolic sense of the county and the Central Valley and the beauty of the agriculture and perhaps even the farm workers. Fresno also has one of the greatest divisions of wealth and class and race in America. A few articles put out by UC Berkeley recently detail that. You can go from one of the richest places in America, the Bluffs in North Fresno, to one of the poorest places within only a 10-minute drive. And
wow.
This is very unique in America. So I grew up near the poor side of town in South Tower District near Belmont, where I often heard gunshots at night, F-14 gang members.
Right.
And I grew up poor working class. When my dad was home, working class. And when he wasn't home, we were poor.
Right.
And so many of these poems, it's almost, like you said, an awakening, a purgative process. Placing all some of these traumatic experiences or harsh experiences growing up in this kind of sometimes violent working class neighborhood, you know, where everyone fought, everyone's fighting to live, some, you know, fist fights in the streets, and getting that on paper.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I want to talk a little bit about that, you know, in terms of your background. Now, see, like me, for example, you know, for folks who don't know Fresno, the San Joaquin Valley, you know, is just an immense region, you know, that inhabits all the space between Los Angeles all the way to, you know, Sacramento, as far west as San Francisco, and all the way over to the Sierra Nevada. It's really the central gut of the larger part of California, in which it's a giant agricultural community. You know, but are you originally from Fresno, or are you from one of the sort of surrounding towns like myself?
On my mom's side, my family's been here since 1918. My great-grandparents came to the United States, like many Mexicans did, during the Mexican Revolution. And my great-grandfather was in El Paso when Theodore Kearny's agents were in El Paso looking for Mexican laborers to come work on Kearny Ranch.
Right.
So that's when my great-grandfather came over in 1918. He worked on Kearny Ranch for a while. And then he built an adobe home on Pleasant and Belmont, about a mile west of Rodian Park. And that had been my family home up until a year ago, for 100 years. So that's on my mom's side. So I'm fourth generation. And on my dad's side, my grandmother was from Phoenix. She was Apache. And my grandfather was from Sonora. Mm-hmm. He came over during the Bracero era. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether he had a permit, but that's when he came over in the 50s.
Right. And, you know, I know that when you mentioned dates like 1918 and you're talking about this historical backdrop to who you are and also to your writing, You know, I think the listeners should also know that we're actually hearing this from a historian, from an actual historian. You know, Patrick, it's kind of a trip because you're so diverse in who you are and your makeup, you know. But you also have a PhD from Stanford, right? Is that correct?
Yes, I have a PhD in American history from Stanford,
right,
with a concentration on American immigration history and the Mexican-American experience.
Right.
Chicano history.
Exactly. And, you know, that's what I find really compelling about your poems is that, you know, I mean, a lot of folks, you know, especially the way we enter poetry, usually for myself particularly, but, you know, it's always through a very personal kind of invitation. You know, you start to want to examine your own life and so you begin to write these. But, you know, not often do I think when we hear personal poems of this nature, do we, not too often anyways, do we really find that behind this is either an ethnographer or a research scholar. You know, usually we study poetry and that's what we write. But you have this other background and it comes through in the writing. You know, how did you go from having an interest in history and coming from that scholarly background? You know, what was the transition from that to this personal poem that you've been writing?
Yeah, well, from the earliest age I can remember, I've been interested in poetry and literature and also, you know, history and social studies. So
right.
It's always been in my person to love both. You know, there was a time when I was on the fence whether I should be going to English or should I go to history. I have several years of Latin under my belt too, where I, you know, studied the humanities and the classics and Latin poets like Catullus.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always had a love of that kind of poetry and literature. And so at one time, they were combined when I was studying the classics. You know, I'm reading the Latin poets. This is history and literature combined, history and poetry together.
Right. And your own sort of personal research interests center around Fresno and Central California. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Right now, I'm working on turning my dissertation into a book. And what I did was I spent a couple of years at the Superior Court Archives in Fresno. Researching about 1,000 criminal court cases from 1890 to 1945.
Wow.
And comparing how various immigrant groups, ethnic groups, were treated by the justice system and how they navigated the justice system. And,
wow,
of course, my findings would be as you would expect, right?
Yeah.
The Mexicans were treated the worst,
right.
Given the more harsher sentences.
Right.
But the process is interesting. Who gets probation? Who doesn't get probation?
Right.
Even the way the judge talks to the defendants, native white young youth get talked to in a grandfatherly way,
mm-hmm.
whereas for Mexicans, it's very harsh and very to the point and direct with no kind of empathy at all.
Right. And then there's also, I mean, I know because I did a little bit of this during my research in the 20s and 40s of Fresno in that area for my books, but there's also quite a bit of that, and not only the Mexican community, but you find that a lot also with the earlier indigenous communities in that area, right?
Oh, definitely. I have court cases where the natives are given, you know, comical names. Their native names are not used, like they're Drunk Joe or...
Right.
Stuff like that. Very, very demeaning by the court system.
Right. Yeah, I know. I remember seeing some of that and it really just bowled me over. I mean, you know, we know these things, obviously, in the sort of general, you know, mindset or understanding. If you know a little bit of your own American history, you know how demeaning these communities have been treated. This part of society has been treated, the indigenous communities, the Mexican-American communities, people of color in general. But when you start to see these documents and artifacts that give dates and names to it, it's suddenly almost, it's still surprising. I find that it's still surprising. It's still shocking to me, you know?
It's shocking because we're not taught this in school. And one of the greatest genocides in, you know, American history happened here in California. The natives were essentially wiped out. A reward was put out by the California governor when California was first a state, placing a price on every Indian scalp. For every white pioneer that brought an Indian scalp, they got paid, I believe it was
$5. Oh, yeah. Right.
And that actually happened in California, and we don't learn about it in school. So when we do learn about it, it's shocking. And there should be monuments everywhere. There should be monuments to the Native peoples everywhere throughout California and the United States, but there's not.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And, you know, and all of this, you know, all of this is in your wonderful collection, Mountains of Rust. Not directly, but, you know, all of this is sort of the backdrop of what informs the poet, you know, who we see here on the page. And so I want to ask you if you wouldn't mind sharing another poem with us. And if you're just tuning in, listeners, you are listening to poet, punk rock research scholar Patrick Fontes, who's reading from his new collection, Mountains of Rust. So would you mind sharing another poem with us, Pat?
Yes, this is called Armando Has a Secret, and it's about the anxiety that young people feel when they're undocumented.
Mm.
Just this last year, when ICE was out in force in Fresno, I received emails from students saying, I can't come to school today because ICE is in the neighborhood and my family is very stressed out. And wow, getting those emails was powerful, knowing my students were suffering this anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, so this is a poem about that. Armando has a secret. Armando Guadalupe Perez looks askance at his reflection, poised, handsome, ties and unties a knot about his neck, places a black tasseled cap and smiles nervously as an older man's furrowed brow in the fogged bathroom mirror hides a secret beneath a smooth brown face. Mama's chili verde cooking since dawn. Everything in the home marinates, furniture, humid walls, the seasoned air, including Armando creasing his pants over and over, spraying starch obsessive for the second, third time until stark borders divide left from right like a knife. An iron's hot steam swirling with tomatillos, chile, cebolla, amor, y cilantro's deep smell. His black gown swims in pork's simmering scent. A hint of mama's sugared sweat in June. On the phone, he hears her calling while she stirs in a floral muumuu. Tios, tias, compas, primos, abuela. Even his Pentecostal Theo Rubin, who went from vato to Pentecostal preacher and waits to finish her homemade menudo every Sunday before yelling at mama as he wipes red menudo juice from his fat jowls. You're going to House of Cornell? Yes, even him she calls excited because her mijo is graduating. Armando breathes deep in sighs, wipes the sweat from his face, sprays himself the third time with Old Spice, trying to cover up his secret, the heavy scent of chili verde, the unspoken fear of undocumentation.
And that is the voice of poet Pat Fontes reading from his new collection, Mountains of Rust, out with Bone and Ink Press. I want to turn a corner here, Patrick, and talk a little bit about your background in the punk scene, because to me, I follow you on Facebook, you know, and I see these wonderful photographs, because as we mentioned earlier, you're also a photographer of these street scenes. But even earlier photographs of your days back in sort of the punk scene there in the Central California region. And, you know, you were no joke, man. You know, you had like, you know, the mohawk and like, you know, and like the big docs. You still wear docs. You're like a PhD professor but you wear docs still.
And that's all I wear.
Yeah, man. You know, and I have to say, you have a poem on page 42 called Young Dead Punks. But it reminded me of this whole idea of this punk background. I thought, man, you know, I hope that you're working on a book. I don't know what you're doing with that, but I know that you have these photos and that you've been doing these oral testimonies. Tell me a little bit about your background in that.
Yeah, well, as a kid in elementary school, I was very rebellious. You know, the principal wanted to spank me. My mom wouldn't let her spank me. I always had a thing with authority.
The principal always wanted to spank. His hand was burning to spank you.
Yeah, she had a big paddle. Her name was Miss Walker. Actually, I have a poem called Stupid
Let's
Little
name
Mexican
her.
In
Let's
my,
name
in
her
my
right
collection
now.
Where, you know, in the fifth grade, she told me, oh, you are the stupid little Mexican.
Wow. That's
yeah,
painful,
so
man.
She always wanted to spank. I was very rebellious. And I entered high school, and I went to my first punk rock show. I was 13, and I went to my first punk rock show, and it was a religious experience. I felt like I was born again. It was amazing. You know, I saw kids like me, kids who were just out of control and rebellious.
Yeah.
The music spoke to me. I saw kids hugging each other. There was like brotherhood there.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm home. And from 13 to about 18,
yeah,
I lived a very hardcore punk rock life. And then when I was 18, I started going to state college, and I calmed down a lot. You know, I still went to shows sometimes, but I became a student. Didn't do all the crazy stuff I did when I was a kid. But for 6 years, I didn't go to high school, actually. In the ninth grade, I took my proficiency examination and left Fresno High.
Wow,
ninth grade. And then for the next few years.
To PhD? Dang, that's crazy, man. That's great. What a journey. This should all be in a memoir.
Rock,
I hope you're writing a memoir.
Punk rock shows and...
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, from the time I was 13 to 18, 19, all I did was punk rock. You know, I didn't go to school, just went to gigs, got in fights, did crazy stuff.
Now, what are you doing with these oral testimonies of punk rockers that I noticed that you've been doing? What's going on? Are you working on a memoir or are you working on a book? What's going on?
Yeah, eventually that's going to turn out to be a book. Right now, I'm just collecting testimonies.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's what I want to do for sure.
Yes. It made me think about the connection between punk rock and poetry. And in fact, one of my own teachers at Naropa was Steven Taylor. And he used to tour with the punk band False Prophets back in the day. And so, you know, he kept all these notes every time he'd go on tour. And he just kept these journals. And then he ended up turning them into a book called False Prophets, Field Notes from the Punk Underground. And then later on, Steven Taylor became the main collaborator with Allen Ginsberg for like 20 years. So every time you see Ginsberg with a musician, it's Steven Taylor who's next to him.
Wow, so, that's great.
So yeah, and so he wrote this book, False Prophets. And then in the book, he starts to talk about Richard Hell, you know, and how the early punk scene kind of coincided with the beat poets and how they were kind of pulling from the same well originally. And I think it illustrates this great fusion between the punk rock scene and poets, or at least beat poetry at the time. And how they were both kind of anti-establishment, anti-conformism, and all these kinds of, you know, it was just a really fantastic illustration, I think, of the possibilities of the punk scene, but also how it's still ingrained in society today. I mean, you know, it is. It's the ultimate sort of rebellious scene, you know, and anybody who had a rebellious bone in their body, I think, looked or drew from the punk scene to some degree, you know, myself included, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we look forward to a book from you on that, you know, and you already got the docs for it, so you're good.
Definitely. I look forward to writing it. I have some wild stories, man.
Yeah.
I bet. Crazy story.
Like, you can't certainly, like, you know, the fact that you're a doc wearing docs, we're not against puns here. Anyway, that's pretty awesome, man. But, you know, I don't know. Let me ask you this, I guess. I want to know, you know, beyond the rebellion, the straight raw rebellion of what punk provided to you at the time as a young man coming up, do you feel like some of that is even in these poems, this collection of Mountain of Rust? Because I tend to see some of that, but how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I definitely, there's an element in my poetry of not only like a youthful rebellion, but a recognition that there's structures in society that are oppressive. And many of my poems are about people living on the margins of society, mm-hmm. you know, living on the edge. The voiceless, I guess that's a term we can use, the voiceless, people who aren't recognized, the people who are living paycheck to paycheck, people who are poor on welfare, and are in those situations because of structures in society over the last few decades, even the centuries, that have pushed certain people to the margins. And over generations of people living that way, there are certain characteristics that mm-hmm. occur in their life
right.
that I think come out in my poetry.
I would agree. And with that, would you mind reading that poem for us?
Which one?
Yeah, the one on page 42, You Dear Young Dead Punks.
Yeah, let me, I have it right here.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to poet Pat Fontes reading from his brand new collection titled Mountains of Rust, out with Bone and Ink Press. Pat is a what I'd like to refer to as a poet, punk rock scholar, PhD in all things punk rock and Chicano culture there in the Central California region of Fresno. So he's going to share with us a poem titled You Dear Young Dead Punks. Pat, go ahead.
Yes. Let me just first say that growing up in the punk rock scene in the 80s, the hardcore scene was a lot different than the punk rock scene that came before it in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
The 70s punk rock scene in many ways was more artistic, perhaps in a way more intelligent. In the 80s, kids like me showed up, kids who were very angry, came mm-hmm. from broken homes, and the music became harder, especially in California. The hardcore music that came out
right.
was harder, it was faster,
yeah.
it was more aggressive. And so a lot of my friends I grew up with, they're dead. They're mm-hmm. dead now because that scene, people who had problems gravitated to that scene because we were all misfits and we found family.
Right.
And plus the lifestyle was hard and harsh. There was yeah. lots of drugs and violence and beer.
Yeah.
And a lot of them had passed away because of drug abuse. And I was never an addict, but I had lots of friends who were addicts and yeah. were still addicts. And it took a toll on their bodies.
No doubt.
Yeah. Okay, so this poem's called You Dear Young Dead Punks. Howl and scream, my friends, across muffled years stolen, decades you missed out on, when young punks you died, hearts tender with fists hard. I hear you roar with life, leather-bound, dripping sweat, round and round in the pit. Arm in arm we went, invincible into the void. Pound your boots from beyond, the nether shadows lost. Let us, the old mundane alive, hear your sweet voices again, you dear young dead punks.
And again, that is Pat Fontes reading from his collection, Mountains of Rust. It's going to come out. Wait, Pat, what is the official release date for this book?
It's a small press.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's up. The website's taking orders now.
Mm-hmm. And that's Bone and Ink Press, right?
I suppose the official release date is when I have my book signing on May 4th at Tower Records in Fresno.
Tower Records, awesome, man. And they still have, Tower Records is a great spot. I used to go and pick up some records there myself when I lived in that area.
Yeah.
That's great, Pat. You know, congratulations. This is a fantastic collection. I'm really excited about it, and I'm definitely spreading the word. We're going to try and help you spread the word, and, you know, we wish you all the best there on your release. Any fun activities? What do you have planned for that release?
I have a couple of bands.
Of course.
I have a local rapper. His name's Big Mac. He has lots of raps about the Raiders, and he's very talented.
You had to go and say Raiders. No.
so he's going to rap, and then I have an awesome metal band from Santa Maria called Legion, and they're playing. They're very talented. They have lots of experience, and so I'm going to have rap and metal.
Nice. That sounds about right. And then you're going to be reading like these Chicano poems, these distinctly Chicano poems.
That's right.
And that is Patrick Fontes in a nutshell, you know, punk music and culture and history and research and community, gente. So, Patrick, man, it's really been an honor to speak with you. And again, congratulations on this book. We wish you all the best, my friend.
Thank you very much, Tim. It's been an honor.
Absolutely. And that wraps it up for today's edition of Words on a Wire. I'd like to thank our special guest, Patrick Fontes. Be sure to pick up his new collection of poetry, Mountains of Rust, that's out with Bone and Ink Press. Also like to thank our wonderful producer back there, Stefania Castro. And thank you, listeners. And we'll see you next week, same time, same place, right here on KTEP 88.5 FM.